everyone. Welcome to the Young Athletes Program event, contributing to the actor profession by volunteering and education. So my name is Angela and I'm one of the Young Athletes Program committee members. So not long ago, when I was still at uni, I volunteered in all these uni groups such as ASOC, or ASOC if you were part of UNSW, and those volunteering roles obviously ended when I finished uni. And sometimes when you're not studying for exams, you might think, I have all this time and a very empty resume. So luckily, there are a lot of opportunities for us, young actuaries, to get involved in. You can be part of the Young Actuaries Program, be part of the Actuaries Magazine, or be an education volunteer. So we're very delighted to have very qualified people who will talk about the volunteering and education roles tonight. So first, we have Philip, which I'm sure is a familiar face to a lot of you. He's the Head of Education at the Actuaries Institute, who oversees the education program. He has been involved in numerous projects, such as developing the Institute's first online program, implementing computer-based exams and pathways, and managing the development of the capabilities framework. We also have Jennifer, who is the Acting Education Manager. She has been managing the implementation of pathways, so it's high quality and meets member needs. So together, Philip and Jennifer will talk about all the education roles available and how we can get involved. We'll also hear from Jacob tonight. Jacob has volunteered as an exam scrutineer, exam marker, and assistant examiner. He has worked with other volunteers to ensure that exams are set, reviewed, and marked properly. And he'll share with us his experience and the benefits of it. So without further ado, I'd like to invite Philip up. There will be Q&A afterwards, so if you think of any questions, do keep them at the back of your mind. Thank you.
Thank you, Angela. So, just get a quick show of hands from people here. Hands up people in the room who are fellows now. Okay, good. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So, you're in the firing line. You're right and ready to do anything that I talk about tonight. Who's an associate? Not far behind. One. And who's a student member? Okay, good. So, regardless of where you are in your education pathway or actuarial career, I think it's important for you to hear about what's available in the education program as a volunteer, because really the whole program works on the goodwill of our members. So there are three of us presenting tonight. I'm going to talk about an overview of volunteering, both across the Institute as a whole, and then talk about the roles in education. Jennifer is going to talk in more detail about how you can volunteer for the Path 3 education program. And Jacob has actually gone through an ideal pathway of volunteering, where he's been an exam scrutineer, an exam marker, and then an assistant examiner. And I believe he's actually given us a reasonably strong commitment to be a chief examiner in second semester next year. Okay, so rather than me just talking all the time, I thought I would do a search for some words of wisdom from Gilbert. And another Gilbert cartoon. So, the Institute would like to say that volunteers are probably our most valuable resource. And probably for about the last 5 or 6 years, we've been running an annual volunteers cocktail party. Well, it's a drinks and finger food session, I know. Cocktails, you can't get a dry gin martini with olives or anything, but it is a way that we like to reward our volunteers. And in preparation for that, we actually did a snapshot of all of the volunteers that have volunteered in any capacity since the 1st of October last year. And this is what we came up with. So this is not just education, this is across the whole Institute. 1,059 volunteer roles, 615 different volunteers. So there are a number of people that do multiple volunteer roles. So that's only 14% of the total membership, but it's a significant proportion. What's the proportion of member types? So very high proportion of fellows, 84% were volunteers. And the age groups, so you can see that the 35 to 50 year old age group are the largest contributor, but the 26 to 34 year group contribute quite a lot as well. So that's across the whole institute. Within education, so since 1st of October last year, there have been 202 volunteer roles, 193 fellows, most of them in New South Wales, and you can see there the spread of practice areas. So, you know, the traditional areas of general insurance and life insurance are the areas that have the largest number of volunteer roles. So, Wizard of Youth. Cartoon. What is a volunteer? So in common parlance, a volunteer means that you do it all for free. This is not exactly the case at the Institute. Some of our volunteer roles are paid and some are unpaid. The reason why we still use the term volunteers, even if you're paid, is you're not actually an employee of the Institute, so we don't have that sort of contractual obligation, and the payment is really a token payment, I suppose. It's a lot less than market rates for actuaries. So the reason why we pay our volunteers is to try and motivate people to get involved. So what's in it for you as a volunteer? Firstly, CPD points. Okay, everyone has to do their CPD. I've also heard from a lot of our volunteers that it's a great way to keep up with what's in the course. So if you're involved as a marker, keeps you up to date, and the course is following the practice, so it's a good way for you to develop professionally. It gives you some kudos amongst your peers. Now, we had a fairly young assistant examiner recently who was telling us that he was relocating from London to Australia, and he was putting the fact that he was an assistant examiner on his CV, and he was saying that he got a lot of good reactions from that. That it showed that you know, he was willing to take on a role that had a lot of responsibility. So it's your chance to contribute also to improving the education program. So there's a line that divides the profession in a way. The people who are qualified and the people who want to be qualified. A lot of you are at the stage where you're on the other side of the line. It's an opportunity for you to contribute back. As new actuaries, you've got that empathy. You've got that recent experience of what it's like to be a student. So I mentioned the CPD points. As of the 1st of January this year, we've replaced the 40-hour system with a point system. So you need to have 100 points in a calendar year, or 200 over 2 years, provided you've got at least 50 points in each calendar year. And you get either 2 to 4 points per hour based on the nature of the activity. So 2-point activities are normally fairly baseline, fairly simple things. For example, attending a seminar, you all just earned, how many hours have you earned? Have you earned 4 points, 2 points per hour, just by being here tonight? 3 points per hour for activities that add a bit more value to your professional development as a member. So, for example, serving on an institute committee. And 4 points for activities that add substantive value to you. So, for example, delivering a tutorial will give you 4 points. per hour. So if you're not familiar with the details of your CPD points, go to the Institute's website under the Professional Development and Regulation section, CPD, all the details are there. So there's a link on the floating panel on the right for the Professional Standard 1 that details all of that. So here's an example of points that you would get for education volunteering. So for example, writing assignments, exams or assessments, course development, delivering tutorials, monitoring discussion forums, all of those activities will give you 4 points per hour. Course leadership, curriculum review will give you 3 points per hour, and marking assignments or exams will give you 2 points per hour. So what are the different roles that you can do in education? Well, I'm going to talk about 4 main groups. First is education committees, and these are all unpaid. University accreditation, there's a number of volunteer roles related to that area, unpaid again. Education projects that come up from time to time, some of these are paid. We usually have a payment for these roles to try and encourage people to do them. And then the pathway education program that Jennifer will talk about in more detail. So with committees in education, probably the 3 biggest committees are the Education Council Committee. That's the committee that has the oversight of the operations and the strategic direction of education within the Institute. Now, it doesn't matter that you're a young actuary on ECC. While most of the members of ECC are older, ECC are now discussing succession planning, and we believe that we should have more younger members on the Education Council Committee. We've also got the Board of Examiners for Part 3. So the Board of Examiners is comprised of Chief Examiners, Assistant Examiners, and Chair. So the Board of Examiners are the ones that look at the details of determining who passes and fails in the Part 3 exams. Then we've got education faculties. Has anyone heard of education faculties and what they do? So there are split responsibilities. The Board of Examiners deal with the assessment side. The faculties deal with the syllabus and the course materials. And the faculties report directly to practice committees as a subcommittee. So if you've ever done a Part 3 course and thought, you know, these course materials are a bit dry and boring, or they don't cover these areas, you can have an opportunity to volunteer to be on the faculty and have input into that. University accreditation. There are 2 roles that we need volunteers for. The first are accreditation review panels. So the Institute's accreditation review system requires every university to be fully reviewed every 4 years. And that requires forming a panel of about 6 people that would review exams, look at the corresponding UK exams, looking at that university's exams, and even looking at examples of exam scripts from students to verify that the breadth and depth of coverage at that university is appropriate and the students that are getting exemptions are at the right standard. Now, it's a requirement in our current policy that people, at least 2 people, are recently qualified fellows on the accreditation panel. So that's an area that we're continually looking for more recent fellows. We're also asking people to be Part 2 external examiners. So with Part 2, what happens is we have an external examiner that would review the exams when they're drafted to ensure that they're of the right standard. They also sign off on the final version of those exams so they can give feedback. And the Part 2 examiners are also involved in approving the results at the end of every semester, Part 2, with our accredited universities. So there are a couple of roles in the university accreditation area. Education projects that come up from time to time. One recent one has been the capabilities framework. So we were looking for volunteers to actually sit on subgroups and flesh out the capabilities framework document. Part of that process was getting more recent qualified people to do critical incident interviews, where they were interviewed about things that they found difficult in their career, and that was used as a way of going back and making changes to the capabilities framework. We also had volunteers working on looking at our current education program and mapping against the capabilities to see to what extent the current education program actually meets those capabilities. We regularly update our course materials. So these would be projects where we want people to volunteer to either review the materials or write new versions of the materials. We've been using a new Part 3 assessment structure over the last few years. So this involves a large number of people writing pools of questions, particularly multiple choice questions, to be used in our new Part 3 assessment system. So there's some examples of projects. Part 3 would be the biggest part of the Institute's education program and the area where we need the most volunteers. So our new assessment structure, one of the motivators for that has been to make the program more sustainable, to reduce the number of volunteers that we've needed and the number of volunteer hours. Now, one of the things I've been thinking is that once that's stabilised, we can actually look at putting more volunteers into not just the assessment side, but into the teaching and learning and support side. So at the moment, the roles that we're looking for Part 3 will be course leaders, chief examiners, assistant examiners, exam scrutineers, exam markers, even more junior roles. So if you're not a fellow already, we're actually looking for people to do exam supervision for us. And also things like presenting at orientation sessions. So I'll hand over to Jennifer to talk more about the details of those roles. So, you're a young actuary, are you up to it? I would say, yes, you are. We found that some of our younger actuaries have actually performed very well in the more senior education volunteer roles. To give an example, so we've got a new member of ECC who's a 32-year-old associate. So it's not a requirement to be a fellow, to be on ECC. And with our project to write new Part 3 assessments, probably the feedback I've had that one of our better writers has been a 26-year-old fellow who only qualified in 2013. So it doesn't mean because you're a recently qualified fellow that you won't be able to take on these roles and do well in them. It's a case-by-case thing. So does anyone have any questions for my part? There will be a larger question and answer session at the end of all of our presentations. Okay, I'll move on and introduce Jennifer.
All right. Well, I'll be straight into it. Your country needs you. As you can see, what would the world be like without actuaries? I mean, think about it. A world with no actuary? Wow, you probably wouldn't have a world you'd be saying right now. Okay. So here, I'm here tonight to entice you to become a volunteer. For those who are currently undertaking an exam, we wish you good luck. And if you see any fellows, I would say breeze up to them because they can make a change to your future exams. And that's what it is here as volunteers. If you want to make a change to the way exams are, then volunteer. And I'm sure back 10 years ago, somebody else was asked that, saying, do you want to make a difference for exams? Because who likes that? Put your hand up. Who likes that? No? I'm not going to stand here for the next 10 minutes and talk to you guys. I'm here, I thought this would be a great opportunity to get feedback from you, your fellows, in terms of how was your exams? Did you enjoy the exams? You look like you did. You look really happy. Look at that. And what do you think we could do to improve it? But right now, the Institute needs you. That's the moment. So, imagine a world without patches. Obviously, you've got a lot of Jersey Shore fans here. Could you imagine that? A world without patches.
Yeah,
he could. And do you remember your exam day? Was it like here in Lord of the Rings? You looked old here in the morning, the exam came along, it was about to start, and then it ended, and those who passed, and even those who failed, still went to party. And for some of you next week, you're going to be doing that. The results, some results come out on Monday for the CT results, and then the following week, following 2 weeks is the ST, along with those who've done part three. So good luck to you. But I just want you as fellows who have just recently graduated as fellows to think about your exam. Did you enjoy your exam? Be my first question. Yes, no, pretend that you just graduated as fellow. Yep. What would you change with your exam? What do you think you'd like to change?
Not sure.
Obviously, make it easier.
I think the exams themselves aren't too bad. It's the how do you get there from the start of the semester to the end. That's the biggest struggle.
And would it inspire you to become a volunteer if you could make that change?
Yes.
Great. And for you as students, and I know some of you have done the CT exams, what did you like about your exams? See, not many people like exams. That's what I'm trying to tell.
The computers are nice. The computer versus university is a very nice change.
Right. Unless you go to a confidence one and then you have a little 15 and Right. So if you could make a difference to that in terms of the exams, because this is what the education is really about. The education program here that we look after is about the exams and getting the students really to sit the exams and helping them any way they can. Now each of you who are fellows and you who are upcoming, you can make that change. You really can. Right here in front of me are the 21st century actuaries. Wow. And you're going to be part of it. And all the wiser and older people, those faces are about to change. You remember the last 5 minutes of your exam? And I know I'm focusing a lot about the exam, but that is the crucial part of the education program. Every student, every candidate comes here, they're here to pass their exam. And they want to know what is the best way to do that. And as a volunteer, you'll be able to tell them that, because you've been there, you've done that, and you say, don't do this, don't do that, and you may or may not pass. And it's not easy to become a fellow. The pass rate is not very high, so you have to be very dedicated. Just like when you're a volunteer, you have to be very dedicated. Why? Because you're going to make a difference to somebody's life. That's what it all comes down to. Okay, so, as Philip said, you are the institute's most valuable resource. This year we had 800 plus students, and of that we needed 100 volunteers to run our program and run it successfully, which is a lot of people to run. And I say we did pretty good. The results, like I say, the results are coming out in 2 or 3 weeks, and there'll be some really happy, happy people out there. There may be some sad ones, but I'm sure that they'll learn from that. So you'll be part of helping those 100 volunteers. And you are the most valuable resource that we have here at the Institute. So we need you. You're going to hear that throughout my entire presentation. All right, so what are the different roles that we have? For the new fellows, you normally get into what we call the exam scrutiny and stuff. And so that's testing the exam that's coming up under the normal exam conditions. And then you provide feedback and or suggestions to the chief examiners and the assistant examiners. Now imagine being part of that, being part of making a change. Now yesterday we had a board of examiners meeting, and one of the chief examiners said that after the scrutiny had tested the exam, he took out a whole section of the exam and changed. So it's quite vital, this role, in terms of if you want to make a difference here and say, okay, maybe it's a bit hard, or maybe it's too easy, then this is the role that you should undertake. Alright, especially for the new fellows. If you're looking to come in as a volunteer where there is pressure on you, I can say, every volunteer there's pressure on you. This is a good role to start. And maybe I'll take it on the doorstep when he gets up here. Okay, then there's the exam markers. What happens is that you put them to pairs, and each marker marks one question from the exam. So most of our longer answer questions is two, but next year we'll be having three longer answer questions. Alright? And so it's quite a robust process that's undertaken. And you only have a couple of weeks to mark exams, and it ranges from the smallest amount we had was probably 11, right up to 82. Right, and that's obviously in general insurance and life insurance. And with those as well, there's always feedback that we ask for from exam markers. And especially when it comes down to borderline candidates, the feedback that the exam marker provides is very critical in terms of determining did they pass or did they fail. Now, like I say, their life is in your hands when you become an exam marker. No pushovers. Okay, then you have the really, really intelligent ones, like Jacob, who become exam writers. And the exam writers will draft three long answer questions and 10 multiple choice questions. Right? And it's about, obviously, it's somebody who's experienced and has experienced the exam condition of what it looks like, and deciding on what they want to focus on. So you, along with the chief examiners, and the assistant examiners decide what the exam is going to cover. Right? Which this is a very critical role. Like I say, all roles are very critical. But as you can see, whatever you, it's like writing a book and somebody's going to read it, and then they may or not buy it, or they may take something good, and then you'll sell more copies. It's not that great. But what you can see is the emphasis is on that this is an important part in terms of the exam preparation. Then we have tutorials. And there are those of you who probably think, oh, I'll be getting in there and teaching these new candidates how to deal with the exams. Now, they normally do that in the last tutorial. So you deliver three 3-hour tutorials, and in the last one, all that the students want to know is, how do I pass the exam? Is that right? When you first, you would have gone there and said, how do I pass the exam? They don't know anything else but how do I pass. And you can become a course leader tutorial. And then there's also a course leader as a form of participation. And as you can see, that's also part of the assessment, right? It's a small part, but when you become a borderline candidate, it can be quite significant in terms of whether you pass or you fail. Right? And it's really about encouraging the students to put into practice what they're learning, in a sense, and make sure that they're learning along the right lines. Now, a lot of the forum participation course leaders are experienced, very experienced in terms of being out there in the industry, and they get a lot of knowledge that otherwise you would pay for. Right. Then we have Jacob, the assistant examiner. And I know for you who are sitting there today, you're thinking, no, I don't want to be exam scrutiny, I don't want to be exam marker. They don't want to be any of the course leaders, because if you're anything like my children, they want it, and they want it now. And they don't want to be clean, and they want to go straight to the CEO position. This is it. Assistant examiner. Alright. And here, you review the exam questions with the chief examiner. And then you also assist the chief examiner. And it varies from subject to subject. But the key thing about this role is that you need it. They need to have an assistant examiner. I.e. they cannot sign off an exam to be set by the candidates unless you have two suitors. So you have to go through it, and Jacob will explain that. But in terms of getting in there and being part of the leadership team, this is the role. And for you new fellows, there's nothing stopping you from actually becoming assistant examiners. The only thing that stops you is yourself thinking, can I do this? Can I get straight into it? So the chief. And some years you'll be the chief in the next couple of years. I can see that now. I'm looking forward to the future and saying, oh yeah, here's the chief, there's another chief. Alright, what does the chief examiner do? So they review and sign off the questions. They determine who passes and who fails. And then they also, for those who have failed, they also conduct exam performance. Now those are some of the areas. There's a lot more that chief examiners cover. But I just wanted to give you a brief view of all the different roles in terms of the volunteering side. And saying that you really want to make a difference, get in, put your hand up and become a volunteer. Okay, why? Because we can all, but especially you fellas, you all know this one. Especially the day before the exam, and you're thinking, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? And what are you going to do? If you become a volunteer, you're going to help the future students, the 21st century actors. What do you guys look like? It's going to be interesting. 10 years' time, I'll come back here and I'll say, what does an actor look like now? I can show you what they look like now. In 10 years' time, it's going to be interesting. You'll probably be driving around on, I don't know, Ferraris. So, at the end of the day, it's about joining us so that you can make a difference. And it's a difference to those students who are sitting here today. All of these, I haven't met any fellow that didn't have a hard time becoming a fellow. It's not an easy profession, becoming an actuary, but once you become one, you'll be like Jacob, happy, married, getting married soon, and above all, making heaps of money. Thank you.
I guess what I'm going to cover today is why should you volunteer? What's in it for you? Why did you come here tonight? It's a shame that we didn't have more people here, because I think it's really valuable to be a volunteer. It's really appreciated. And I personally have gotten a lot out of doing volunteering for the last few years since I qualified. So, you know, I'm really hoping that you guys get excited about it too. So my pathway, as I think Jennifer and Philip mentioned, has been to progress from a scrutineer to an exam marker to an assistant examiner, and maybe next year a chief examiner. So we'll see. Also, we're going to have question time, obviously, as I mentioned, and some deep and meaningful actuarial discussion. That's a joke. Alright, so some of these things that we've already spoken about, CPD points, we all need them. You know, that is a big draw card for being a volunteer. You know, I'm guessing that's some of the reasons that, you know, one of the reasons that you guys came tonight is the CPD aspect and learning about that. Building your profile and networking, like even tonight, you know, I met a few of you, and you know, it's really good to build those networks. You never know how you're going to, you know, whether you're going to bump into someone down the track or work with someone that you meet in this profession. It's very small. Literally, like, if you don't know someone, you know someone else who does in this profession. So building those networks is crucial to your future career as well. You know, staying up to date with the education program and new developments in techniques and what we do, you know, in our day-to-day work is really important. I think you can do that through volunteering, because you get to stay up to date with the course materials. Giving back to the profession is important. You know, we do get a lot out of this profession. It is rewarding. It's hard to qualify, but you know what? Do well out of this profession, you know, once you become a fellow or even an associate actuary. And I think that you know, in doing that, we have almost a responsibility to give back. You know, it is rewarding. Obviously, through volunteering, you also develop your communication and leadership skills, more so in the chief examiner and assistant examiner roles, but even being an exam marker. Being a scrutineer, you know, you check the exam, but that's there's not as much engagement there. But exam marking and being an examiner, you have to engage with a lot of people, like with other, with the safety of the assistant, you engage with the chief examiner, you engage with the markers, give guidance, and you develop those communication skills. Also, giving post-exam forms and you know, reviews with candidates in the past, that all, you know, improves. So there's also the opportunity to provide continual feedback on the education process and try to improve how it works. You know, the computer-based exams recently that have come out were as a result of feedback that we need to modernise how we do things. And we used to have written exams, so we moved on from that. I always was curious when I was writing exams, how are they marked? how do you get these answers, like, you know, in terms of results? Sometimes it appeared random to me, so I was quite curious to actually see it from the other side of the fence and be involved in that process, so I could actually have faith in how things worked and that it wasn't Gandalf, you know, waving the wand and, you know, giving me pass or fails. And there might be other reasons that are applicable to you, like it's put in your CV, for example. That's another reason I think Jennifer would do that. So, scrutineering, where I first started, I think, you know, certainly it's a natural progression for newly qualified fellows, freshmen sitting exams. You know, you are in a position where, having just qualified, you can give really valuable feedback. Is this exam too short? Is it too long? Is it, you know, covering the course material properly? You give that feedback to the examiners, and they take that into account. And I know that when I was a scrutineer, you know, I provided feedback on those things, and, you know, I certainly feel it's taken into account. And being, having been an examiner now, seeing feedback from the scrutineers, we did change the exams based on that feedback to adjust it to make it appropriate. And look, I also think that, you know, who doesn't like sitting exams here, right? You know, we all love exams, otherwise we wouldn't have taken this journey. So why not sit an exam? We have no risk of failure. As far as I know, if you scrutineer, no one's ever lost their fellowship. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No.
Okay.
It has been discussed, but no, we should.
Correct. Oh, and of course, there is a small payment for these things. So for all the roles that you know, I've undertaken, there is a monetary payment, but it's not, as Philip said, anything close to what you make in your day job, but it's there sort of as an incentive. Exam marking. Well, I think leading into exam marking, the scrutineering at least gave me a lot of empathy for students, having been a student previously, but I think you really do remember what it's like to sit the exam under the exam conditions. And therefore, you know, when you mark, you know, sure, the student's answer isn't perfect, but under exam conditions, have they covered the key points? Have they shown you that they're fit to practice? That's really what we're assessing students on. Have they met the fit to practice criteria to give advice as a fully qualified actuary? And that's the standard that we set. It's not about, you know, giving the perfect answer if you had, like, you know, hours and hours to think about it as you do in the office. Also, through marking, you meet other examiners. So every question that you mark, you team up with another fellow marker, so you get to meet new people from other companies or whatever. In my case, I actually initially teamed up with a colleague of mine, but you know, I've also worked with other people who you know, are from different companies as well. And also, what's, you know, one of the things is forming a consensus. So you may disagree about certain candidates' you know, answers in terms of the quality of them or, you know, whether they cover the key points. So you can, you know, work on those influencing skills. You know, do you basically get to a point where you agree that a certain candidate has met a certain standard, and that's something you can work on through the exam marking process? Yeah, and look, I found it interesting to actually see how it works firsthand. As I mentioned. So that brings us to being an examiner. So I think, as I said, it's there's a diverse range of opportunities, and you work closely with the chief examiner. So, you know, progressing through that pathway has basically led me to a number of things, like selecting exam questions. So you get a pool of questions for multiple choice and long answers, and you then go and select from that pool, but also change, and sometimes the questions need to be modified to be suitable, in our opinion, for the exam, so we go through and do that. Are there any questions? I've always sort of talking at you, there's all these faces staring at you. So the other part is setting, you know, marking guidelines. So we tell the markers how we feel that they should set the marking standard by doing six random sample papers that are selected by someone at the institute, and we go through and mark them independently, and then we calibrate what we, so when I say we, and the chief examiner and I, come up with versus the markers. So we get to that standard based on that, and then mark the rest of the papers. So we set a benchmark for marking. Now, one of the things that's pretty tough, and I just had to do it over the last couple of weeks, is borderline candidates deciding on whether they pass or fail. And look, again, the empathy aspect. Having been a candidate, it's pretty tough sometimes to make those calls because, you know, especially if they're right on that cusp, you know, making that decision that the candidate hasn't met the criteria can be difficult because you do feel for them. They might just be enough. You don't know who it is. You get a number on, you know, a candidate number, as you know. But, you know, you still know it's a human being at the exam, but it's tricky. But you have to make these calls in that role. Writing the examiner's report, again, that's something that I've just been doing with the chief examiner. So summarising what the pass rate is, where people did well, where they didn't do well, what things candidates needed to work on, so that it helps people next semester when they take on that subject. And I think I've already mentioned the post-exam performance interview. So, you know, often the chief examiner would take the bulk of these, but last semester I split, the chief examiner and I split that responsibility, so I interviewed six candidates and he interviewed, ten or so. You can imagine it would be quite difficult to interview 16 people as a volunteer, so, you know, you split that up. And that, again, is another opportunity to meet new people, hopefully help them pass next time. I genuinely believe that, I'm trying to help people in my volunteering role, and if they didn't pass, I want to go through the exam with them, help them for next time. And look, there's fantastic engagement opportunities, so, there's obviously these institute functions that you go to, the volunteer cocktails party. There's these sorts of events that you can go and meet new people at, and other things that come out of doing volunteer work. So do it. and I think I mentioned this already, the continual improvement aspect, helping students pass, going forward in future exams. I've kind of gone through that pretty quickly, but I was hoping that you guys would have some questions and ask about my experiences. So please, fire away.
How did you feel when you were continuing for the first time? Like, did you feel different sitting for the exam itself, or
yeah.
How did you find that experience?
Certainly, you don't have the nerves as much as you do when you don't really have any nerves because you know that there's no outcome in terms of passing or failing. It's just about giving feedback. So you certainly have that difference there. Also, you still want to do under that time pressure because otherwise it's not genuine. It's not a genuine attempt. So you still have that time pressure that you're trying to meet, but you don't have the nerves associated with really sitting an exam. So that for me was a big difference. Yeah. Good question. Thank you. Anyone else?
When did you start volunteering?
I started volunteering about 3.5 to 4 years ago. Yeah, so pretty soon after I qualified. So I qualified about four years ago. So,
By qualifying, you mean you graduated from uni? So
I became a fellow about 4 years ago. Yes, so I've been working for about 8 years. I qualified about 3.5 to 4 years after I started working full time after uni and started volunteering. I think it's been, as I said, a wonderful journey for me. And I hope all of you guys are encouraged to do it. Thank you. Any other questions? Do you have a question?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what roles can you perform before Europe, I guess?
Before Europe, I think there were, I think Jennifer spoke about, Philip spoke about the looking at exam observation.
Supervision,
yeah, that's right. And what else can you do? Do you guys want to answer that?
Well, you could probably speak to students at universities regularly. So if you've already graduated from university, perhaps you could volunteer to come and join us to talk with us about the education program. You'd be a good link between us and the students then, because the students could identify with you as being a role model, somebody who's come through and graduated. The exam supervision thing is a new thing. We haven't really been thinking about getting members to volunteer for that, but we're looking at that now because we think it's probably a good way, if you're going to be doing a Part 3 exam in the future, to actually go there as a supervisor. It'll give you an idea of what actually happens on the day. It'll be a different exam, of course, when you sit it. So you won't be able to put it on your arm and take it home. but yeah, there are a couple of ways. Getting involved more in presenting at events like this. We run a part three orientation session, so getting members involved in that. I suppose that's probably more for fellows as well, because somebody who's a recent qualifier is the ideal role model. So yeah, most of the volunteer roles are fellows. However, I did mention that we've got a member of ECC who's an associate, so it's not a barrier to joining that committee. BOE, you would have to be a fellow. Faculties, probably you'd have to be a fellow as well.
There you go, some many fellow roles.
So you've got another reason to be motivated to become a fellow. Your volunteer opportunities will be much greater.
And I think, Philip, you mentioned during sort of the pre-presentation briefs that we were thinking of the Institute, thinking of creating a new data analytics kind of area.
That's been discussed, we need to move into new areas, emerging areas for actuaries. So data analytics has been one that people have been talking about, either incorporating it into the part one side or as a specialist part three, potentially.
And the reason, go ahead.
I was going to say, just on that, I mean, what kind of time frame are you looking at? Because I'm sort of looking at doing my specialization soon, and it's sort of, I would be particularly interested in the data analytics.
Hard to say.
Should I wait?
It might be happening next year.
Yeah.
It may take 2, 3, 4 years to emerge.
So don't wait.
Don't put your studies on hold.
You can always go back and do it after.
I could.
Look, probably another thing I should say is, the focus tonight is about education volunteering. But there's a whole lot of other ways you can get involved in volunteering across the Institute, and you don't have to be a fellow. The Actuaries magazine, for example, writing articles for that. You can do that no matter where you are in the membership.
Yes?
Oh, with that one, even as a university student, or is that too...
Yes, that's definitely.
Well, I think as a university student, you have like the Actuarial Society that you can volunteer with as well. And that's a good way to kind of step into volunteering anyway. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Does anyone here volunteer in a uni Actuarial Society? No? Okay. You did?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. How did you find that?
Pretty enjoyable. I was in the marketing team, so I was doing the magazine as well.
Yeah. Yeah, cool.
Chris, your roles that you've done, what's the time
commitment? Yeah, that's a great question. Certainly, in that order in which I went through the roles, that's the increase in time commitment there. So, being an assistant examiner or a chief examiner takes up a lot of time, and also the monetary incentive is a little bit higher in that sense. Being a scrutineer, you basically sit at the exam, you set a few hours aside, effectively. Being a marker, you set aside a number of hours to go through all the exam papers for the long answer questions you're going through. And then being an examiner, you've got the pre-semester preparation setting the exam, the during semester going through the borderline candidates, helping give marking guidelines, and then doing the post-exam forms interview, so it goes through all the way and writing the exam report, so that takes many hours. I haven't got an exact number, but quite a few hours.
Yeah, we've got estimates from people over the years that we've sort of averaged out, because as you can imagine, it's one of the first questions we get asked when somebody responds to a call for volunteers. They want to know what they're letting themselves in for. The more senior roles are chief examiner and course leader. So a course leader that takes on all the functions like writing the exam, delivering tutorials. They're kind of around about 40 hours a semester. The assistant examiner, it depends to what extent they get involved, but it would be around about half that.
Although I think in my case it's a bit different, because the chief and I, there's only one assistant, whereas I think there are usually two.
Yes.
So Dave and I, it's almost, almost half, but it's probably 30-70 or 40-60. So.
So the scrutineer, as Jacob mentioned, you sit the exam under real conditions. So you set yourself the 3 hours to do the longer answer questions, And you might spend another hour or two writing up your feedback after that. So that's a good one for new fellows to get involved in, because that's the role where you have to be a new fellow to do it. We don't let experienced fellows do that. We want somebody who is a good proxy for the actual students that are doing the exam. You're the guinea pig, if you like. You're the representative of all the students that have to do that exam that semester. With marking, we've had estimates that it takes about 20 minutes per candidate, per question, to mark an exam. And we normally give you 2 weeks with 3 weekends to do your marking.
So put your hand up if you're a nearly qualified fellow. I think you did before, yeah. So who's going to be scrutineering? You should. It's a good way to get into it. And it only takes a few hours, maybe 4 or 5 hours of your time.
I thought of opening up scrutineering to people who have passed that course before but aren't yet fellows, because if anything, that's sort of closer to
students.
Interesting idea. Yeah. I think it's only a small time commitment, and I'm assuming it's not, if you're only getting 5 or 6 to do it anyway, an extra 1 or 2 on the end isn't going to kill anyone, I guess.
Yeah, that's a really good point, yeah.
That's a great suggestion. Which course have you passed that you're volunteering to?
At the moment, I think the only course I've passed so far is the old C1 investments for 4 years.
Oh, okay,
ago.
Damn, we don't run that
anymore. I've just gone 3A though, so hopefully I passed that.
How long after you qualify that you're considered a new fellow, then after which you can't scrutiny anymore?
Well, we've sort of been using the guideline of within the last 3 years. One of the other things I should mention about scrutiny is that we want people that are good students. We wouldn't get somebody who's the prize winner in a subject to be a scrutineer. We're after somebody, not offending you here, Jacob, I hope, we're after somebody who's close to a typical student. But, look, the more recently you did the exams, the better, I suppose. We had set that standard that you have to be a fellow, but that's a very good question. And, you know, we should consider people who have passed the exam that aren't yet fellows, because they're the closest to the actual students.
So,
yes?
And how long do you have to stay in the role for?
Well, I think I did about 2 semesters of each of those roles. So about a year, but I don't think there's any requirement.
There's no minimum, and sometimes what happens, it depends during the semester what's happening too. So you might have a scrutineer that will be there for semester one, but can't be semester two, but then the following year, it's really up to the volunteer.
So you do like one subject in the first semester and another subject?
Yeah. I think I did all my volunteering in 3B, general insurance. Because I'm particularly interested in pricing, capital, and reinsurance. You can do whatever you like. Is it Sasha?
Yeah.
Do you have a question?
No.
So, Jacob, of the three roles you did, which one did you enjoy the most?
The most rewarding one is the one that's taken the most time, which is the existing exam role. Because that's the one where you know that you have the most impact. You really get on the pulse in terms of who passes and who doesn't, and you do need that performance review, so that's the crucial one. As Jennifer said, you know, that's key. You can't really have an exam happen without the assistance of the chief examiner. So that's been the most rewarding for me. Okay.
I imagine the roles are multiplied with CAP.
Hmm.
Like, how many of you are sort of like
No.
Yeah.
6, 7
Yeah, that's right, in CAP.
Mm.
Because we've got
your
3 non-traditional areas and the 5 traditional, we use 7 scrutineers, 8 scrutineers. there are a lot of people required in the CAP course.
And normally the ones that write the exam also mark the exam, and then you get the second mark. So, that's sort of like a general trait.
Yeah.
So how do you get into
You can actually volunteer through your profile on the website.
Yeah.
So you know where you go in and update your email address and details like that. If you move through those screens, there's a section where you tick areas you're interested in volunteering and education. So it actually lists the roles and you just tick them. Now we actually run reports out of the database from those to get people who are interested. Another common way of recruiting volunteers is through the email bulletin, the weekly email bulletin that comes up every Monday. Who reads that thoroughly and religiously every week?
I might take a handout
of the just scan through that and have a look for the heading education volunteers. So that's usually the first port of call. But yeah, we do look at people that have filled out their web profile expressing interest.
Do you need to do interviews?
No.
No. Depending on the role. Yeah, but even like, in terms of the assistant examiner chief, it's a sort of progressive role. And so by the time they get to that stage, then they're pretty much ready for it. And it's normally the chief examiners that will recommend the assistant examiner chief, sort of like that. But in terms of the scrutineering exam market, no, we don't put you for a 6-hour interview. Yeah, the scrutineering side is normally done over a 2-week period.
Mm-hmm.
So it's normally sort of around about March and sort of the August period. So it's been, so specifically for a couple of weeks, we say you can block that out. And it depends on the scrutiny, how long it takes. What might happen is the chief examiner might come back or assist in saying, why did you make that comment? And there's a lot of significant changes that can happen at that time. The markers are a bit different, they get out there, they mark it, and it's pretty straightforward in terms of what they do. They become borderline candidates and they might be asked for more feedback. When you get into the course leaders and the examiner's role, then there's a lot more responsibility type. So it varies from role to role. There's some who can do all course leader roles, i.e. we have some who are the exam writer, the tutorial person, and the form participant.
And something else that you know, that a colleague of mine today mentioned that you can be a mentor. I don't think she has a mentoring program, so that's another way to volunteer. So that's where you partner up with the people who are studying or even people who are qualified, and you give them career advice. Like, let's say someone who's newly qualified gets a partner who's someone who's 10 years qualified, so they can partner up on that. How do you get into that, actually, Philip, into mentoring?
I think it's the leadership committee that are running the mentoring program. So, to be honest, I don't know a lot about
it. But my colleague did mention that, unfortunately, although a few people volunteered, there weren't that many people who took up the offer to have a mentor in that program. So, again, even though there are people willing to spend their time as mentor, there weren't enough students who wanted to, or qualified people who wanted to take that up. So, it works both ways. You need people to really put that time aside to take up those opportunities.
Yeah, and I suppose the other thing to point out with if you become an exam marker is you're normally paired up with somebody who's very experienced. So if you're new to exam marking, don't be scared about that because you'll normally be paired up with somebody who's done it probably 4 or 5 years. And so that really helps the team in terms of working out how you're going to mark it.
Do the exam markers only get involved once the exam's been sat?
That's normally over like Philip was saying, normally over 3 weekends.
Yeah, and then what happens is there's, as I said, there were 6 papers that the markers mark, and then the examiners do the same papers, and then they give feedback to each other and calibrate the marking approach so that they can mark the rest of the papers. Because you don't want to have the markers doing 60 or 70 exam papers and then realising that the two markers have done a completely different thing, and then you have to go through every candidate to try to get a commonality there. Any other questions?
So what sort of revision of the course materials do you do before marking and screening? Is that a lot of time? Why don't you just do some sort of...
You mean setting the
exam. So
I've both been marketing and scrutineering, so before you take the exam, test it, do you spend a lot of time going back over the material again?
I think it depends on the person. I think if you just qualified last semester, you hope that you still have the material pretty fresh in your mind. But if it's been like 2 years, then you probably need to review the material. But it also depends on whatever you're working on, I think, because if you work in pricing and you do a lot of insurance stuff, then again, the concept should be fresh in your mind. Whereas if you've been a volunteer as a life insurance marketer and you work in GI, then you probably need to do a lot of reading. So it depends. So are you all keen to volunteer? Okay. No, but look, I didn't come here to tell you anything tonight. I just came here to tell you about my experiences. I've got nothing really to gain personally from promoting it, volunteering, but I can tell you that I've found it really rewarding, so I just encourage you to do it and see for yourself. That's all I really can say.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jacob, Jennifer, and Philip, and all of you guys for your participation. So that was absolutely informative, and I'm sure you guys will gain a lot out of it, meeting with other volunteers, working together, getting community points, and, keeping it fresh in your mind. So if you're interested in stay around and talk to Philip, Jennifer, and Jacob, and ask any other questions that you have, or if you're interested in joining the ACTRES program and being part of the ACTRES magazine, then you can talk to me. So our next event is quite different. It's a poker night, which is in 2 weeks. So it's on Thursday, 11th of December, same time and same place. There'll be lots of food and drinks, and there will, of course, be prize money. So if you want to join, you can register. So thanks for joining us tonight, and I hope to see you next time. Thank you.